I was in elementary school, I wasn't much of a reader, and I basically never read a single book that wasn't assigned to me by a teacher. And to be honest, I probably didn't read all that many that were assigned to me either. Until I was later on in high school, and I made this incredible discovery that there were actually books out there written just about music, which totally blew me away. And so the first book that I ever really read on my own was the autobiography of Miles Davis. Now, Miles was one of the greatest musicians of the last century, if not several, and has contributed more to the genre of jazz than I will contribute to anything at all in my entire life. But the thing about him is, he wasn't always a kind or warm or peaceful person. The way that he spoke about drugs and women and even his fellow bandmates, while quite exciting to a 16-year-old drummer, wasn't always what I would call compassionate. In fact, looking back, I'm grateful that his instrument of choice was trumpet and not voice, given some of the language that he was prone to use. When I talk with fellow musicians or activists about what music can do to make the world a better place, I always want to talk about how musicians are better people than non-musicians. That music just inherently taps into something good inside us and brings it to the surface, and if we all just played more music together, the world might finally be at peace. But unfortunately, the evidence doesn't always seem to back up my ambitious claims. Miles wasn't the only famous musician who I wouldn't quote directly in church. There are endless stories of jazz greats and rock stars and so many others who, to put it kindly, cared more for music than for the people in their lives. Our popular music today of all genres often seems to have agreed on an unoriginal love narrative where the author needs someone else in order to be complete. And more often than not, women are the objects, and I don't use the word object lightly, women are the objects of desire side by side with fancy cars and big houses. So music, it seems, like any powerful tool, can be used for many purposes, both kind and unkind, peaceful and unpeaceful. There are some good examples, though, of musicians whose hearts were set in love and whose minds were guided by justice. Music might not always instill good values, but it can help strengthen the communities where those who love peace and justice find the strength and the support to go out and act on their beliefs. There are people who, when they knew what needed to be done, set out with instruments in their hands and music in their throats to create the kind of world that they wanted to live in. In 1928, far south of here, in a neighborhood called Plaza 11, or Plaza 11, in the heart of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, the police at the time were in the midst of a campaign to suppress Afro-Brazilian culture. And so the laws at the time forbid blacks to have parades in the streets. Does this sound familiar, Portuguese? But in 1928, some of the most talented and involved samba musicians of the day got together in Plaza 11 to create a community center for the promotion and performance of Afro-Brazilian music. It was the first samba school, as they're now called, and in defiance of the authorities, they held a small parade in their neighborhood. And when they went out into the streets to play samba music loudly and defiantly, other musicians and neighbors stepped out to join them, and they held a small, illegal carnival. That first samba school, called Deixa Falar, or Let Them Speak, only lasted a couple of years. But the model of the samba school that they created would go on to transform the whole of Brazilian society. Today, every year at Carnival, dozens of samba schools from every neighborhood in the city parade for days on end, each passing through the magnificent Samba Drome, a huge stadium built by the state to seat 90,000 people for this one event every year. In South Africa, I don't have any reason to think that the music of the resistance brought morality or kindness to the anti-apartheid movement. Some of the songs that they sang, to be honest, weren't really that nice. "Mother is proud when I hit the white man," they would sing. "Come, soldier, come." But it seems that music might have given good people the support and the strength and the courage and the hope to go out and do what they already knew needed to be done. It might have shown them that in a unified family of resistors, no one need act alone. Can you picture a couple dozen, or a couple hundred, or maybe a couple thousand black South Africans standing together at a rally? Having gathered to find a solution to this problem of apartheid, they are ready to go out, to march, to make their cry public, but outside the state is waiting for them. Maybe with fire hoses, maybe with tanks, certainly with a number of police following unkind orders. Will they go into the streets? Will they be heard? Will they be arrested or worse? First, they will sing "Senzenina," "What have we done?" Senzenina, 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 senzenina. Musician and cultural activist Sibongile Kumalo talks about this song with a sense of awe. She says, "Can you imagine? That is one line over and over and over. I mean, come on, you have no other option but to stand up and go and fight. If someone asks you that, it's like a hammering." Historian and playwright Duma Kadnavolu says that somewhere down the line, we will be forced to sit down and view our history, and Senzenina, like "We Shall Overcome," will take her rightful place in society. Because at one time, a mass body of people related to that song and touched one another's hearts using that song. So, what exactly can music do? I think it can probably help us to touch one another's hearts. I think it can remind us that we are not alone when we face injustice and difficult times. I think it can give us the courage to act and do what we already know needs to be done. We know that the world needs our healing and that each of us cannot do it alone. Like the rebel samba musicians of Praza Onse and the communities of South Africa who proclaimed their humanity and their commitment to each other with song and drum beats. Like the women and men gathered in 1863 on Freedom's Eve, celebrating their victory over slavery, but seeking in music and in prayer a community strong enough to confront a still very uncertain future. Like the workers of Immokalee in the fields picking tomatoes, who know that they are not alone in their struggle for dignity. We know that the world needs our healing and that each of us cannot do it alone. As Unitarian Universalists, finding the strength and spiritual energy that it takes to act on our most demanding of values requires nothing less than the most loving and committed of faith communities. Let's sing together and pray together and take care of one another so fiercely that we can't help but go out into the world with a profound clarity of purpose, that peace may overflow from our lives and justice from our congregations. May it be so.